Dr. Judd Burton, welcome back to the Edge broadcast.
Well, I'm just tickled to be here.
Okay, well, I tell you what, we're going to tickle your funny bones, because I got all kinds of quips to lay on you tonight, like I normally do. hey, but Doctor, I was giving kind of intro, and I was talking about, we're going to be talking about monsters tonight, various things, zombies and things that go bump in the night, but this country is full of monsters now. I mean, is this the same thing? Are these monsters like transitioning into human form?
Well, I definitely think that the same spirit is behind it, I think.
I think we're talking about the same sort of spiritual
and intellectual fuel that you find in these folkloric monsters as you do in the kind of dissension that's taking place in our country right now.
Okay, now what kind of spirit are we talking about over here?
I would say that it's demonic.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I don't know if you can see, but your face is kind of at top of your camera. If you get down a little bit, there you go.
There we go.
I mean, you're just too handsome for us not to see the whole full view of Dr.
I know.
All right, that's pretty good. You okay?
Very good.
Okay, so, all right, so we talking about, is it a negative spirit, a demonic spirit? Where is this thing coming from, Doctor?
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't say that it wasn't coming from the demonic realm. You know, it's not just the dissension in this country that's happening right now, but it's a spirit of fear. If you look at, and you could actually put a name to that. It's had many names over the millennia. Its first one was probably Azazel, one of the fallen angels, but Azazel, of course, eventually became known by other guises, Udzaga, and probably the most popular name would be Pan, the Greek god, where we get the word panic from.
Hmm. Now, Pan, he's not that kind of goat-looking thing, is he?
He's the goat-looking thing, the satyr, half-man, half-goat, was one of the incarnations. And interestingly enough, that creature is also found in the Bible. There's a passage in Isaiah chapter 34, I believe, that's usually translated as he-goats, but the Hebrew word is shedrim, and it's the same thing as the Greek Pan, as the satyrs that you find in Greek mythology. So you find these things all around the world. There are variances of them, but it's the same spirit, and I believe that spirit is very much at work today. When you look around, just in our society, not to mention other societies right now, look at how prevalent fear and anxiety is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, I still haven't figured out the toilet paper hoarding thing. And by the way, I mean, is toilet paper all back in the stores, you think?
From what I can tell, it is, but I didn't understand that either. I didn't see how far toilet paper was going to get you in the zombie apocalypse.
Well, you can bake it, you can fry it, put it in a stew. I mean, a lot of things you can do with it. That was irrational fear right there, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. But quite irrational.
But now, a lot of things going on in the country, though, the things that are generating fear are not irrational. Their reactions... Well, to what should, but they're definitely a fearful situation. What would you recommend for somebody to handle in something that is clearly a fearful situation?
Well, the best thing to do is to try and keep calm. You know, as cliche as that sounds, most reactionary behavior that ends up with negative consequences stems from not thinking rationally about your situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can put all kinds of fancy appellations on it, but I just grew up knowing it as common sense. When all of this started, you know, I started thinking about how I grew up with people who grew up during the Depression, you know, who were always used to being self-reliant to a point, but also not very reactionary to things, and thinking pretty level-headedly about things. And I, you know, in general, that would be the overarching advice that I would give to people.
Mm-hmm. Now, last week I gave some advice, and that is, if you're on the highway, and monsters, because we're talking connecting that to the monster show tonight, block the highway, it's always best to make sure that you're on the right side of the highway. As you're going down the highway, make sure you're on the right side, on the burn side, so that if there's a stoppage, you can make a U-turn on that burn side and go right back to the next exit. Now, if that there would be called situational awareness, and I think the more situational awareness that each person has, the less fear they'll have. I think fear comes when something springs upon you and you are unprepared.
Right.
You know, the Bible actually commands people to be prepared. In fact, it talks about the ant. It says, "Go to now, sluggard. Behold the ant. He prepares for winter." Well, we've got an American winter coming right here in the middle of summer, and there's no spring in sight as far as I can see. But that doesn't mean we've got to live in fear. That means we've got to assess the situation, have our situational awareness going, and do the best we can to not only just survive, but even to thrive. I don't see why we can't even go further than say, "I'm just hanging on. Man, I'm hanging on until heaven calls me again." Well, I think too many people have been hanging on instead of been out there fighting the war like they should have been doing. That's why we're in a predicament that we are in. Go ahead.
That's right. Well, you know, I agree with you, Daniel. I think that, you know, we are commanded in the Bible to put some back, you know, to be a little prepared for these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes back to the sort of common sense. But we're so driven by consumerism these days, and we have to have the next, you know, the next biggest thing, the latest gadget, and the shiniest thing, and the newest clothes, and this, that, and the other. We're just bombarded with it all the time. But on a pragmatic level, it doesn't do us a whole lot of good to think along those lines. My sense of it is that yes, we can even do more than survive in this. We can thrive if we have the right mindset. Mm-hmm. And going back to your point about how we got in the mess that we're in right now, that is a multi-institutional, you know, hurricane basically, that's been building up, and in large part, not completely, but I think that it's an institutional and educational problem. We've eroded a lot of the classical virtues and taken them out of the education system, so that the active role that the citizen used to take pride in, mm-hmm. Most part, not that they don't anymore. We have good public servants and statesmen, but the citizen taking part in the governance of society is not a virtue that's extolled. And in order to do that, you have to have a certain you have to be conversant to a certain extent in the culture and the history of that society that you're going to be taking part in. And sadly, and I can speak to this as a historian, having taught history for 20 years, that the factual curricula for conveying that just doesn't really mm-hmm. exist like it used to. It's been completely jettisoned.
Right. I mean, back in my day, when I was a boy, when I had to go to the outhouse out there, and then had to go to the pigs, and I had to, you know, deal in your pig slop, what have you. And then when your cow out there, he needs tipping, so you got to go out there and knock him over when he ain't looking. But they always taught me respect for authority. Now they teach kids to hate authority.
Yeah.
There's no other word for it. Just disrespect them. They said they're being taught that the authority is your enemy. And by the way, let me greet a few more people just logged in our live chat. Tiffany Grimmer, Ted White, Nancy joined us there, as well as... well, that's the three that just joined us right there, in addition to the others. Well, Russ Dizdar says there was going to be a black awakening. I call it more of a demon awakening. Now, what's triggering this thing, Doctor?
Well, you know, we're all on a prophetic timeline here. I'm not a date setter. I am a biblical scholar, but I'm not a date setter when it comes to that. But, you know, Christ in the New Testament said that we would know the seasons. We would understand, you know, if we paid attention, we could discern the signs of the times. And, you know, the entire chapter of Matthew chapter 24, the Olivet Discourse, is when Jesus is talking. His disciples are asking him questions. How will we know the signs of the end? You know, and he says, you know, he tells them you'll be able to discern it by what's going on around you. He said, you know, don't be confused when you hear about wars and rumors of wars, because that sort of thing is going to happen all the time. But but Jesus knew at least that there was a peculiar species of events that would unfurl. And people have different names for it. Russ Dizdar is a great guy. You know, he calls it the Black Awakening, and I think that's a pretty, you know, or a demonic awakening. I think those are both pretty good, pretty accurate descriptions of what's going on right
but
now.
But what is the, let's just say that the demonic awakening is upon us.
Sure.
Now, what do you think triggered this awakening? Was there something from another realm that to send out like a text message to everybody, or did they get it in their brain because they all kind of stupid? I mean, how did they get that message? Because they all everything seemed to simultaneously. Like every demon in this country got woke.
Yeah, well, you may be more right than you know, and the analog there may be apt about text messages, but. You know, I think back to the last century, and even the century before that, when particularly dark occultism became more in vogue. You know, it almost became as popular as parlor tricks, and people became more interested in what has historically been called the left-hand path or the Luciferian path. And as you saw more of that creeping into not only Western society, but societies all around the world, but particularly ours, since that's the focus here, I think you can trace that back to this sort of occultic awakening in the 19th century in the Western world. But when you fast forward to the technological age, you know, and let's say the atomic age, we were able to do things that really would have seemed magical in generations before. And I'm thinking, of course, about things like the atomic bomb and the entrance into the quantum realm, our understanding. I mean, and now we're at the point to where we use super colliders under the auspices of, you know, understanding how the universe was created. But then you have all these other scientists like Stephen Hawking who are giving these very serious caveats about you may not want to do that because you may rip a hole in the space-time continuum. You may create artificial singularities. Well, you know, these are concepts that the Bible has talked about, that ancient literature has talked about for millennia. Mm-hmm. And so the timetable may have been such that these entities, you know, demons, fallen angels, whatever appellation you want to put on them, were allowed to come in because of all of the occultic activities that sort of preceded that, sort of set the precedent for it. Mm-hmm. And now we get to an age where, you know, the line between magic and science is being blurred by these these techno sorcerers who are using quantum technology. We have quantum computing now that literally dumps the information into another dimension and garners that information from that dimension to use in this one. How can we know? How can we have any frame of reference what exactly that's doing? And you go back to people like Jack Parsons, who was involved with the founder of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard. They were involved in a Crowleyan, that is Aleister Crowley, a Crowleyan sort of thelemic magic, a working known as the Babylon working, which was specifically designed to bring in the Whore of Babylon mentioned in the Bible through a book. Now, this is Jack Parsons. This is the guy that founded the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He was a brilliant scientist, but he was also an adept dark occultist.
Mm-hmm. It seemed that when Jesus would walk past somebody that was demonically possessed, and maybe even the apostles, they would trigger. He would trigger them. And sure. And I'm just wondering, as I was talking about, I said earlier, mentioned that it seemed like every demon in the damn country's just got woke. But it seems then, I'm not saying Trump is the Jesus figure, but perhaps if he was divinely installed or assigned to a time as this season, prepared for this time of the season, which a person like George Washington certainly was, Abraham Lincoln was, Martin Luther King was, it seemed like there were people in time and space that were destined for their time to be there. He seems to be one. I'm just wondering, instead of saying Trump triggered them, perhaps the force that prepared him, or maybe even the Christian force that's out here triggered the other side. Some kind of, what I'm saying is it possible there's something, God's presence, maybe somewhere in the country or all over, manifested somehow, and that's what triggered these people? Because initially, and I use Trump as a reference point, not as a figurehead, but you know, people start screaming at the sky in the very beginning. They were running around with vagina hats. Remember that? Yep. Women pulling their shirts off. You know, you could tell the temperature what it was too. But and then you got all kinds of stuff going on, screaming at the sky, running, just going crazy. There seemed that was when the switch was thrown. But I'm wondering, was there something nationwide, because I'm putting it just in this country, that caused them? Was there something that happened besides Trump, say, as being an elected person?
Yeah, I think so. You know, you may be familiar with a movement in American history known as the Great Awakening. It was one of those. It was a big revival that took place in the 1730s, 1740s, 1750s. You know, right leading up to the American Revolution. And it was one of the four main bases for the American Revolution, along with education, the Enlightenment movement, and the French and Indian War. Those four things had to fall into place in order for the American Revolution to take place. And I have said, a number of my colleagues have said that study the Bible from this perspective, have said that we are on the cusp of another great awakening. There have been several of them in the history of the United States, and a lot of us feel like we're on the cusp of another great awakening. Well, then it shouldn't be surprising that the demonic realm is. I mean, they already know that they're toast anyway. So their desperation just grows exponentially as the years go on. And it gives you pause, so much so that I could say, in a general sort of way, I do think that we're in the time that the Bible refers to as Jacob's trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, it hasn't gotten Lord of the Rings meets Terminator weird yet, but we're getting close. Mm-hmm. So you can see the pieces falling into place.
Okay, all right, we've got a number of questions. Let's start off with this one here from Australian Ben. By the way, how you doing, Australian Ben? Got your guest suggestion coming in next week. All right, is the spirit of the Antichrist at work and the manifestation of evil incarnate in crazy Marxists? I think that's kind of self-evident.
Right. I would agree with that. You know, of course, the Apostle John warned us in his letters that there were many Antichrist, that there were Antichristoi, that the spirit of Antichrist permeated, since the time that Jesus died, it would permeate, all the way up to the present, all the way up to that time period that we're in now. So we can't really pinpoint who the Antichrist is, the figure that the book of Revelation references, but again, so there have been antichrists in the past. You can look at people like Hitler and Pol Pot and their ilk, and they were clearly antichrist figures. But as far as the antichrist figure incarnate, has yet to be revealed. But it would not surprise me if in this generation he was revealed.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is from Azure. Do we live in an electrical universe or not, and why?
Well, that's a little out of my wheelhouse. I dip my toes in the quantum stuff just because, you know, the Bible has talked about dimensions and things like that in the context of ancient languages. And we're just, the science is just sort of catching up to that right now. And I know that that's been discussed. You know, are we living in a kind of simulation, you know, a kind of matrix-style simulation? Mm-hmm. Nothing would surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't surprise me.
All right, this question from Gladys out of the live, these are all from live chat there, Doctor. Is it possible the Large Hadron Collider has released the demonic energies?
I think that that is a distinct possibility, because here's one of the interesting things about that. And of course, there are a number of super colliders around the world. There's another one that's in Tennessee. And there are these, you know, big particle accelerators. They smash subatomic particles together, and you know, it releases a great amount of energy. The thing that's interesting about the Hadron Super Collider and some of these others are the ceremonies that have been associated with their opening, their christening is probably a bad word, but their opening. There are all of these very eclectic, occultic. It's almost like a there's a lot of pageantry, but there are these very clear, you know, occultic elements in these ceremonies. And if I'm not mistaken, there is a statue of Shiva, the Hindu god Shiva, on the grounds at CERN.
Hey.
He was the god of creation and destruction in Hindu mythology.
How come they don't go? How come the rioters don't go knock down the Shiva statue?
Well, that's an interesting point, considering that it was the Vedic Aryan peoples who moved into India and took over and relegated all the darker skinned people to the lower caste within their system. So that's a thing that I talk about with people all the time, is that they'll, you know, in our country they'll pull down a Confederate statue, but they'll also destroy a monument to the all black 54th Massachusetts Regiment that served in the Union Army. So these people are strangers to history. They have no context, no frame of reference, no respect. And it doesn't take alphabet soup after your name to have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there does seem to be no real methodology to just random, just really just violence. But I'm just wondering if maybe what happens is, You got your Hadron Collider, okay? And it's going to shoot that particle around. It's going to go the speed of light, go around and smash into something. Nobody knows what the hell it's smashing into. It's smashing into something. Then a little cloud comes out of there, and that is like opens a little portal. And then your demon comes out through there, and then he's looking around to get into the empty head of an anti-fall person. And that's how they get woke. That's when they call it getting woke. We call it getting demonized. What do you think? Is that a possibility?
Absolutely. You know, there's so much that that people like missionaries and pastors and you know, people who have worked in deliverance ministries, you know, they've been able to put together character sketches of what demonic behavior is like, and we know they're. You know, we know their modus operandi from Scripture, but there's also a lot of field work, you know, that people have done for, you know, literally centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about the demonic realm, again, is you have to remember their fate is sealed. In the end, they're toast. But their desperation is such that it creates dangerous stratagems for those of us who live in the physical realm, because they want nothing more than to eat. It goes back to Scripture. What does the devil want to do? He wants to kill us. He wants to destroy us. He wants to take from us.
Yeah, well, there's that one video where a woman is at one of these rallies, one of their kind of rallies, of course, it's pre-COVID, but she was saying, we've got to eat the babies. We got to eat the babies. She started screaming that. But as far as making bad choices, I mean some of these anti-people are talking about getting in a dangerous situation, man. They go to topple a statue, then it falls and hits them in the head. But hey, here's a fun question for you.
Okay.
What do all Confederate statues have in common? And I'll leave that to the chat too. Maybe you can pick first.
Okay.
Dun, 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 dun. Time's going up.
Well,
nobody get it. Nobody got it. Yeah. Oh, ding. Okay, they're all Democrats.
Yes, that is true. They are all Democrats.
Yeah.
You're right about that.
Little fun fact. Every single Confederate statue is a Democrat, and it's no wonder they want to take them down so the people don't find that out. Because some little kid might say, "Who was that?" Oh, well, that was somebody in the Democrat Party. Okay.
Yeah. All right. The retort that I usually hear is that, well, it's not the same Democrat Party anymore. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced that that's true.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of that, a berserker out of the live chat says, "Are these deep state Democrats, are they reptilian Dracos, or are they just demon possessed?" I always like that Draco is kind of a fun name. I kind of like it.
Well, you know, whatever shape or form they may take, I think it's pretty safe to say that a lot of these protesters and demonstrators, you know, are demonic. I mean, if you look at some of the footage of their behavior, and you compare it with some of the video footage of people, you know, that were allegedly possessed by demons, and you know, there's a striking similarity. Just complete. You know, you look at these people and you think that they were just raving lunatics. If you didn't know that there was a spiritual, you know, facet to their behavior.
Mm-hmm. Well, lunatics with a plan. You want another question? Okay. How about this one? Recently, Nancy Pelosi ordered all portraits of slaveholders that were Speaker of the Houses to be taken down from the Capitol. What did all those slave-owning Speaker of the Houses have in common?
I would imagine they were all Democrats as well.
That was for $2,000. That's right. Good thing. That was double Jeopardy, too, so you get double one on that one there. Here's one from Doreen, 8951. It says, is coronavirus some sort of evil ritual?
Well, that, you know, that's interesting. Again, diseases, as they're referenced in the Bible, are very often connected with a demonic, a spiritual root. When you consider that this virus was likely cooked up in a lab, you know, in Wuhan, China, and the people that were working on it are probably part of this, you know, this sort of nebulous cabal, mm-hmm. that has names like the Deep State and the New World Order, whatever tag, the Illuminati, whatever tag you want to put on it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that there's a very high probability that it does have some sort of demonic spiritual facet to it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's nothing new, because, you know, Jesus knew that. You know, a good third of his ministry was ministering to people who were demonized, and more often than not, that was accompanied by some sort of physical disease. That was the epiphenomenal, the outward showing of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you something. Many believe, Doctor, that there are, in fact, vampires out there. A couple questions on that.
Sure.
One, do vampires, are they required to wear a mask? And two, should they check to see if their victims got the cooties 19 before they extract their blood?
Probably just to be safe, you know, if they want to do that, you know, they'll probably have to, if they're in Texas, they'll have to deal with the same state mandates that the rest of us are here and mm-hmm. everywhere else in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We hear the word vampire, and it's just, you know, it comes with all this literary baggage. You know, we hear vampire and we think about Christopher Lee on one of the old Hammer films, or Bela Lugosi or something. What we have to do is to strip, and I've been talking about this for a number of years, is we have to strip the literary vampire, the cinematic vampire, away from that, and take it back to the antediluvian roots, where these demonic creatures, these demonic spirits come from. They come from the disembodied spirits of giants. That's made very clear in the apocryphal literature. And if you look at the behavior of these things, and the judgments that were passed down to them by God through Enoch. Mm-hmm. If you looked at all that, what did they do? They consumed blood, you know, and they were cannibals, and they were after a kind of false immortality. And in Enoch in particular, there was a scholar named Montague Summers who wrote a really good book called The Vampire as Kith and Kin. And this rather adept clergyman linked vampires to that pre-flood world and their judgment, because they're condemned to roam the earth and to hunger and thirst and never be sated. And that word unclean spirit that's used to describe them, guess what, is the primary word that's used to describe demons in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm. Now, your typical vampire, he'll go something like, "Oh, I want is your blood," like that. But then a Democrat vampire would say, "Hey, we got to raise taxes to help you out." Now, are those two vampires from the same tribe?
Well, one certainly is the cinematic, and I think the Democratic vampire would be the actual vampire. That's your demonic spirit working on draining the life out of the society that it lives in. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's difficult sometimes to get people to think outside the box about creatures like this. Not just vampires, but there are hosts of them. You know, werewolves and all kinds of chimera and shapeshifters and zombies. But when you look at them through the biblical lens, they come into focus, and you begin to see that their behavior patterns are demonic.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to a couple more questions for you real quick here. Ted White says, is 5G the physical interface for the AI bots, and why is Trump promoting it?
Oof. Well, as to the first question, I suppose that's possible. I understand that 5G has some particularly worrisome possible physical ramifications, just because of the exposure, because it would be such a wide-reaching network. But as to the second one, I couldn't say why Trump.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to this one. Ted White, is Joe Biden dead and only a hologram voiced by AI, or is he a clone, sort of like a Hillary Clinton type?
Well, whatever he is, he's basically a meat puppet right now. He can't string a sentence together. You know, and in all seriousness, if he has dementia or something like that, that's tragic. But it's what's disturbing about it is that he seems to be I think the Democratic hope is that he would be a placeholder to be knocked out of place, mm-hmm. for a vice president to take over, and then of course you would still have dangerous organizations like the Clinton Foundation.
Well, exactly. That's my. In fact, I'm even ranted about that. That is, he is nothing but a puppet. He is a placeholder. He's a safe grandpa looking, although sure he sniffs little girls' hair, sure he talks about little kids touching his curly leg hair, sure he says that he's married to himself, you know, but he looks safe because he got some hair plugs, and so yeah. he's just a placeholder, man. But it's like that biblical text, you know, so where a man cleans his house but then seven worse demons come in. Well, he's the guy cleaning the house in a artificial sense, and then seven worse demons are going to come in and run this country, and who knows where the hell it's going to go. All right, let's get to this. David Burnell, as a researcher of biblical teachings and today's occurring history, do you often have clashing views with your liberal colleagues or students?
Oh my, yes. You know, in fact, virtually all of the teaching that I do, I was an full-time academic for about 20 years.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
And well, you know, that's where God called me to be there when I was, you know, when I was there, and I accomplished that. But he also called me out of it. And all the teaching that I do now is through my Institute of Biblical Anthropology. And so I have students who are coming at it, you know, from that worldview. But to answer the question, yeah, it's extremely difficult. You know, there tended to be a sort of baseline respect you know, that academics have for one another, but they can get very territorial. And I was getting to the point where I was becoming, you know, as a conservative classical scholar, I was becoming, you know, a rarity. Most of the classical scholars I know are thorough postmodernists. And that's part of the problem. Postmodernism has done nothing but bad for this country. We're reaping the benefit, you know, not the benefits, but we're reaping, you know, those seeds that were planted by postmodernism. And yeah, it's difficult. And academic freedom is an illusion now. You know, you should be able to pursue whatever course of research you want. But you know, not only from testimony like mine, but also from, you know, if anybody saw the documentary Expelled by Ben Stein, that really encapsulates, you know, the illusion of academic freedom. It's just gone. It's just not there anymore. And anybody that says different is lying to you.
Well, we can ask Europe how that globalization and mixing of all countries into one, how's that working for you? How's that working out for you? And if it's a mess as far as I can tell. In fact, speaking of frightening, somebody asked, Gladys has this question. What monster do you find the most frightening?
Yes. Well, here's in all seriousness, though, you know, here's the troubling thing about all of these folkloric monsters is that you drill down on them and you find their demonic roots. And that's the disturbing, frightening thing, because, you know, believers should have, you know, some toolkit to be able to understand, you know, what demons do and why they do it. That's the really disturbing thing. And when you put these different faces, you know, on them around the world, you know, based on the sort of cultural milieu that you happen to be looking at, and, you know, and you really, especially when you take into account the testimony of people like missionaries, you know, if you've ever talked to missionaries, man, these guys are on the front lines, and they see this stuff all the time. And so for there to be any incredulity, particularly coming from the church, which unfortunately there is, you know, is a really sad commentary, because the Bible speaks of all kinds of monsters. We've got giants and these Shadarim, satyr creatures I was telling you about, the Liliths, Leviathan. Leviathan was a god in ancient Near Eastern mythology. So, you know, it's all there. You know, I'm not really saying anything new that the Bible hasn't already told us before. I'm just trying to bring it into the wheelhouse of the modern era.
Well, in my Facebook post for tonight's show, I said, bring your ghost box, if you're going to catch a ghost, but make sure you don't, you know, if you got the gun, you don't cross the streams, you know.
That's right. But never cross the streams.
Never cross the streams, doctor. But considering ghosts or demons and what's going on in this country, we need to have one hell of a gigantic box for as many as run around this country.
Yeah, there should be lots of there's a friend of mine who did a book one time called God's Ghostbusters. We need to have lots of chapters of that organization around the country. But in all seriousness, you know, you can look at ghosts through that lens too, and there, you know, there was a particular giant tribe known as the Rephaim. And their name literally translated to the dead ones or the shades. They were literally thought to be the spirits in the Mesopotamian abyss of these ancient Near Eastern rulers. And so, you know, even ghosts, you know, you can look at through the lens of the Bible and find, you know, in many cases, these demonic entities that are parading around as people's dead relatives or other spirits. That is truly frightening.
Let me see here. Let's get to this question here. The fallen angels were cast out of their first estate and the earth became their second. Is demonic possession of humans their third habitation, and what comes next, doctor?
Well, that's interesting. You know, the fallen angels, the what the apocryphal literature called the Watchers, the word is egregore, were a different group. They were part of the demonic hierarchy, but they're a different group than the Nephilim who were destroyed in the flood and became the demonic spirits. So you can sort of think of the fallen angels as the generals and the field marshals and the colonels and the higher ranking officers, and the demonic realm, the demons, the lower rung as being the lower range officers and the grunts, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to remember that distinction. Now, whatever estate that they're in right now is usually analogized to the Greek Tartarus. You know, there's a whole retinue of the description of what happened to the fallen angels in the apocryphal literature of the Bible, in which they were imprisoned and chained in different locations around the world. So their estate is pretty lowly, although they seem to be able to access through the aforementioned, you know, left-hand path, dark, occultic, Luciferian sort of things that are happening today. You know, like, you know, child molestation and abortions, which are part of that ritual. You can call it, you can clinicalize a procedure like abortion, but it's child sacrifice. As far as the third estate, for the fallen angels, I would say that would be their imprisoned locations.
Hmm. I don't know the name of it. I didn't write it down, but it's let me just blurt it out. Maybe you can help me with. Sure. They say a lot of elites are trying to get this Andronicline or something from kids. You have to scare a kid, and then at a certain point you get that out of their blood. Have you heard, what you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Well, I should say generally I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's the fear. Here we are again with that spirit of fear. It's that fear that drives that spikes their adrenaline, and mm-hmm. it goes into the bloodstream, and that's considered to be a more potent.
Yeah, our helpful chatters got it, and that is adrenochrome is what it is.
Yep. That's it.
But now I've been seeing some conflicting things on that, because this woman, Ghastly Ghislaine Maxwell, she's the person that provided little kids to Epstein and all the people from Hollywood and everybody else, world leaders that went to his orgy island. But there's a conflict there. Some say that. Because you can go to YouTube and elsewhere and see pictures of all these people, these leaders with a black right eye. Mm-hmm. George Bush, the Pope, Madonna, everybody has. Now, I haven't had a black eye since I ran into a kid playing kickball in the third grade. So I don't know how these adults are getting these black eyes, but there's hundreds of them. And they claim that that's a result of that adrenochrome. Have you heard anything? I mean, because we're talking monsters, and to get that, you have to be a monster to get it out of a kid by terrorizing them. So that makes them a monster, and this is a monster show. So is that part of that?
I would think so. You know, I can't speak to the what I suppose would be the medical term would be the phenotypic expression, the outward expression of whatever that chemical, you know, effect on their bodies was. But all of those Luciferian rituals are designed to give a false immortality, because these people really think that they're going to live extended lives, and some of them are mm-hmm. deluded into thinking that they can live forever.
Mm-hmm.
But it all goes back to that in itself is very vampiric, you know, and the offering of this artificial immortality.
Yeah, and then the second part of that is somebody says that when they don't have it, after they've been using it, then they turn into these Skeletor-looking freaks, like Madonna, and then there's that one woman who's a singer, and she got like a 2-foot neck, and she looks like a stick. And then James Carville, he looks like a Skeletor, right, freaking Crypt Keeper-looking freak. But they say that you revert into these skinny bone-looking creatures when you don't get it after you've been on it. So I think that might be exposing these doofuses when they don't get it. All right, let's. Here's a question from Gladys. She asked the question along these lines. She says, "Do you believe that there's a group that actually harvests this adrenochrome?"
Yes, I think so. I think, and they've probably been doing it for longer than the public has known about it. You know, if you talk to people, you know, you mentioned Russ Dizdar. You know, Dr. Greg Reed is another good guy, man. He's really been on the forefront of this, and you know, he actually went through a lot of this stuff as a child and saw it up close because they were grooming him. You know, thank God, you know, by the grace of God, he was able to get out of that. And he's just on fire for the Lord and has been for years about helping people with it. He's a real good resource. He'd be a real good guest for your show. Yeah, I think that this harvesting of this has been going on for a long time. Listen, you know, the sacrality of blood, you know, is a universal concept. We read about it even in the Old Testament in the Levitical material about what does it say? The blood is life. Do not eat the blood. You know, there's a reason for that prescription. Proscription, excuse me. It wasn't just thrown out just to be poetry and just to be literature, because there is this supernatural component in blood. You know, it sustains us physically. It sustains us, to, you know, to a point. Supernatural.
Well, the
So I
Bible does
think
say
that
life
this,
is in the blood.
yeah, this has been going on for as long as these sorts of child sacrifices and human sacrifices have been going on. You can find evidence for it in the ancient Near East. You can find evidence for it all over the globe. You can find evidence for it right here in the Americas. Just go down to Mexico and look at some of these cenotes that the Maya threw these human sacrifices in. They found skulls of children littering the floors of these sinkholes that had filled in with water because they thought they were openings into the underworld. They very well may have been because they were performing these kinds of bloody rituals.
Well, the amount of abducted kids, or they say are abducted or missing children, is
Yeah.
in the hundreds of thousands. I just don't think they're just getting having angry parents swapping them all the time, grabbing and running for the hills. All right,
No.
Robert Griffith says, do you think Barbara Bush is the daughter of Aleister Crowley? Now, she is one ugly skank, certainly qualifies.
You know, I have heard that. I have not looked at the genealogy myself, but I do know a number of other researchers who are convinced that that's the case. I can't speak directly to that, but again, nothing surprises me these days, Daniel. It wouldn't surprise me. You know, with all that the Bush family has been involved with that's come to light, it just wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, and what's up with George Bush always slipping little candy to Michael or to Michelle Obama? What's that all about? You know about that? Every time he's around, every time he's around her, him or her, whoever, he gets a little piece of candy and hands it to her. What's he saying? Candy, little girl? I don't know.
I don't know. I wish I knew.
I don't know. I expect more from our leaders. I really do. All right, there's another question for you. Now you're a doctor. I mean, it says right here, Dr. Jud Burton, PhD. Do you understand, doctor? Now, somebody says, hey, what's your degree in?
My PhD is in history with a focus in religion in the classical world, and I have a master's degree in the anthropology of religion and archaeology.
Hey, I like this here. David Burnell wrote in our chat, says the black eye is a ritual of the worm that enters into your body of a soulless individual, and the worm enters to become evil possessed. Now that's interesting too. Talk about the worm, okay? Because the Bible says that hell is a place where the fire is not quenched and the worm dieth not. Doctor, do you know there's a, I may have asked this question, I don't know. Do you know there's a place on earth where that scenario is played out every single day?
In the physical earth.
In the physical world, there's a place where the fire is not quenched and the worm dieth not.
Well, I know that the analogy was made in the Bible to a place called Gehenna,
That's another
which
Jeopardy.
was a
This is another Jeopardy question, by the way.
Okay, well, I'm throwing my 2 cents in. The comparison was to Gehenna, which was a trash pit at the base of the mountain that Jerusalem was on, and it always had trash burning on it. And of course, there were all the kind of vermin that you would expect, you know, maggots and things like that down there. It was always on fire. But yeah, Definitely give me the Jeopardy answer.
Okay.
I'm waiting with bated breath.
All right. The Jeopardy answer is, by the way, does anybody in the live chat know the answer to that question? If you've been listening to the show long enough, you might have heard me say it once or twice. Try to give tips out, man, so people can feel really good about themselves by getting an edge question. All right, well, here it is. It is underneath the ocean by the Mariana Trench. There are fissures from the underground where fire is literally underwater. Now, around these fissures where fire is in the water are these giant tube worms that surround them. And this, interestingly enough, Doctor, as I'm probably bringing this to your remembrance, these tubular worms eat sulfur. Sulfur is the same thing that is as brimstone, which is where the devil, where he is, his lair is. Fire and brimstone. Right. Brimstone. Sulfur is another word for brimstone, and these worms die not, and the fire is not quenched.
Yeah, mind is blown. I never would have, Daniel. I don't think I would have put those two together, but you're exactly right.
Could be portals to hell too.
Again, it's possible. I nothing surprises me.
And
these
because
days.
we had a guy on our, in fact, it's in our one of our liners where we have a bunch of our previous guests. We tie it all together. If you ever hear the beginning of this show, you hear that liner. And he said he met the devil. And he said the devil offered him a job. Well, that guy also said that he was behind a desk and the devil lunged at him. He smelled sulfur in his room, and the devil lunged at him and hit like a glass wall that was in front of his desk, and he bounced off. But he said before the demon entered, there was a smell of sulfur. Seems like that's a thing with them freaks there.
Well, it's not uncommon to smell to have a foul smell in the room, often reminiscent of brimstone.
Yeah, imagine if they have gas too, boy. Whew. All right, are Nephilim? This is from Majid Magi from Malaysia. Did I get that right? He wants to know, he or she, I don't know, are Nephilim and demons the same?
Yes, in a manner of speaking, but they're separated by events. The Nephilim were the first generation, in the pre-flood world, they were the first generation of giants, the offspring of the fallen angels and human females. There was this exchange for genetic access for all this sort of occult and practical sciences that were given to humanity. So the Nephilim in the pre-flood world were the giants. When they were destroyed in the flood, their spirits became demons, what are referred to as unclean spirits, both in the apocryphal literature and in the New Testament. And so they're the same eternal entity, but one has a physical manifestation. And as a footnote to that, of course, Nephilim became a kind of generic term in the ancient Hebrew world for all giants.
I think some people claim that when Hillary's colostomy bag gets overfilled and starts spilling out, they smell sulfur there too. All right, put y'all away first. Put y'all away first. Says, are we at the beginnings of sorrows, Doctor?
Well, you know, again, if I'm not mistaken, that's basically the same time as Jacob's trouble, the beginning of sorrows that's talked about in the Olivet Discourse. Yeah, I think that we're on the cusp of that. I think we're in the initial stages of it.
Do things like silver bullets and putting salt around your windows, do these things work?
Well, that's interesting.
Garlic.
I don't have a flintlock pistol with a silver bullet in it, you know, on my mantle, but it's interesting that some of these, what we call apotropaics, and that's a $25 word for something that keeps evil spirits away. There's certain apotropaics that go back to, they usually have a kind of holy or relic origin. In the case of silver, that was associated in many cases with the silver that Judas Iscariot paid off, you know, in the exchange for Jesus. And so anything that has to do, you know, a cross, holy water, all of that goes back to Even the various kinds of woods that were used against, you know, werewolves and vampires, like what's the tree? The aspen tree was a popular one. The aspen was, according to lore, was the kind of wood, it was a poplar that was used to make the cross that Jesus was crucified on. And that's why, if you look at an aspen today, the story, you know, this is the lore, you know, not necessarily historically verifiable, but if you look at aspens today and the wind goes through them, their leaves, it looks like the tree is shivering or shaking. And that's supposedly because of the shame of having been used as the wood for the cross. And so a lot of these apotropaics go back to that sort of connection, particularly in the Western world. But, you know, worldwide, they're usually culturally specific. They have to do, they're all grounded in what is considered the normative within that given culture.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so imagine I'm walking at night and there's a full moon out there. Here, bring a moon up. Do I got a moon here? Hang on a second. Let's see if I get a moon here. So I got to set the tone here. Okay. It's a dead night. Now you got to imagine this, okay? You with me? Okay, it's dead night, and I'm walking. There's the moon right there. All of a sudden, I look around. I see a creature going like that. And then I start hearing, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, hee, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. How do I get out of that situation?
Well, I hope that you've studied the dance moves for Thriller. You probably want to back out, but make it choreographed. You know, you want it to be dancing out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
you know how I get out of it?
I think you can get out of it that way.
You know how I would get out of it?
The crazy thing is,
you gotta answer. You gotta go long here now.
We have all these you know, accounts of people running into these things. You know, whatever we want to call them, the Algonquin Indians called them the Manitou. One of the Lewis and Clark expedition members claim to have seen one. He writes about it in his journals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they're called dog men up in your neck of the woods.
Well, let me break in here. I got to ask you again. Do you know how I would get out of that situation?
Well,
just play along. You know, just say how, Daniel.
I'm playing along. I think you should do it artfully. You're going to have to do the Thriller dance at one point in time. But I would do it in the opposite direction.
And you ruined my line, man. I worked hard on that. I sit here thinking, I thought this whole thing up. Okay, I'm going to tell you because you're not asking. Daniel, how would you get out of that situation? I'd stop imagining. See, I told you. Imagine that. Dun, 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 dun. Hee! Yeah. I'd just stop imagining. Okay, forget it. Forget it, man. Go ahead and say something.
I'm going to recycle it. I'll recycle that one.
All right. I'm done. Go on. Go ahead.
No, let's take another question.
Oh, okay. Another question. Australian Ben says, Hollywood is often referred as the dwelling place for demons.
Mm.
Is it conceivable 99% of Hollywood celebrities are demons in human form? And is this how they're going to corrupt the world?
Well, if they're not, you know, so much has come to light, especially within the last 5 years. But it's been, you know, it's been known for decades that there's a serious, you know, Luciferian presence in Hollywood, and so I don't think you can make the case that they're necessarily demons taking physical form. But I would say that a lot of those people are demonized. You know, when not even just considering their politics, when you consider their ethics and morality, it's. And the sad thing about the movie industry, and, you know, God bless them, I think that there are people out there, you know, godly people, like Jim Caviezel is one, you know, who played Jesus in The Passion of the Christ and The Count of Monte Cristo. You know, there are folks like that in Hollywood, you know, who are maintaining their faith. But so many of them, you know, they get bought off into the system and basically blackmailed, you know, with the kinds of sort of eyes wide shut, you know, rituals that they take part in, and they can't get out of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's tragic. But yeah, there's a palpable demonic spirit, presence there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Doreen asks, do you believe there is a planet X?
I'm sort of out to lunch on that. I think that there could be.
You say you're out to lunch?
Yeah, I'm kind of out to lunch on that.
I wasn't going to say it.
I think there could be, you know, a rogue planetoid in our solar system. I'm certainly not sold on the Zachariah Sitchin interpretation of Nibiru as being Planet X, because that's a mistranslation. You know, Sitchin touted that he was able to translate all these Sumerian cuneiform texts, but he made all these classic grammatical errors. In fact, when you look at Nibiru in wherever it may show up in Mesopotamian literature, Nibiru is always referred to as Marduk's star, and in Mesopotamian astrology, Marduk's star was Jupiter, and so Nibiru, when it's referenced in those ancient documents, is talking about Jupiter. It's not talking about, you know, a planet that brought the Anunnaki here. Now the Anunnaki, you know, those are analog to the biblical Nephilim, so I do believe that they existed. But relying on people like Zachariah Sitchin for a concept you know, a rogue planetoid or something like that, Nibiru or Planet X, it falls apart at the base.
Mm-hmm. Tom Hanks, in his Twitter feed several times, I don't know if he still does it or not. I'm not like a Twitter friend. I just seen it come through the feed every now and again, but he would show one shoe or one glove, and apparently, and it looks like they're of children. What kind of hidden message is going on there?
Well, of course, there are rituals in Freemasonry. I think it depends on which lodge we're talking about. I want to say that it's maybe Scottish Rite, but there are Masonic rituals in which, you know, a glove is removed for the taking of an oath. So my suspicion is that you're probably not talking about the run-of-the-mill Freemasonry. You're probably talking about Illuminized mm-hmm. Freemasonry, as in the Bavarian Illuminati that actually George Washington warned us all about back in 1798. You know, he wrote there was a Baptist minister who wrote, that just blows my mind. I mean, he knew about this stuff back then and was trying to warn the country about it, because there were elements of the French Jacobins who were Illuminized. They were part of the Bavarian Illuminati. They were the most extreme arm of the French Revolution. And what symbols do you see a lot of these protesters taking up now? The guillotine. Now, these are the crazies that after the French Revolution, if you didn't fall in line with what they thought, they would march you off to the guillotine and you'd be mm-hmm. a head short.
The Governor Nuisance in California, I think he's banned prayer or church gatherings to 10 or less, some ridiculous number, basically just killing. I'm wondering if that whole thing isn't designed to stifle the power of people praying. And I wonder, Doctor, what's your sense of those Christians who do not go to church now as a result of their state rule against the assembly of an establishment of religion? They're creating laws against the establishment of religion, basically. Are those people that are staying home, is your sense that they're praying more against the wickedness in this world, or are they kind of having less because they're not being accountable and they're waiting to get back into church and then show everybody how they can pray while in front of a crowd?
Well, you know,
and I'm not being facetious or demeaning.
Sure.
That's a true question right there.
Sure, I understand. I think it depends on the level of faith of that person. I really think that's what it comes down to, you know, because some people are just prayer warriors and they don't stop, you know, just one day to worship. Their entire week they're worshiping God, you know. So I think a lot of it depends on whether you're talking about a Sunday morning Christian, for lack of a better term, or somebody that's actually lifestyle evangelism.
Mm-hmm. Because wouldn't, but, if prayer does the kind of damage to the demonic realm that we all believe that it does, it seems that they're trying to stop it at the gate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As a friend of mine says, prayer is not nothing. And, that is definitely true. We're told that Scripture is our sword, and we pray from the Scripture. We pray from our knowledge of the Scriptures to supplicate, to ask God for what we need, to ask God for protection, but also to pray against these demonic forces that are plaguing our country right now.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of all this, it looks like a political and social mess, which it is. But at its root, it's a spiritual problem, and there are no political answers for spiritual questions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you got that right. Gladys Kravis asks, did the legion of demons who went into the herd of swine remained trapped in that flesh when the swine were killed?
Well, that's a reference to the deviled ham passage, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's hard to tell. They jumped into off a cliff basically, and without the living, ostensibly those pigs died. So without the living vessel there, they would by default be spread away and be roaming and looking for other vessels to occupy.
Mm-hmm. How many demons do you think there are?
Well, you mean total?
Yeah, how many demons are there in existence?
Oh, man, that's...
Billions? Thousands?
That's a great question. A number of people have tried to apply, demography to the number of, the science of population to exactly how many demons there are. It sounds cliche, but it's hard to say. It could be thousands, it could be millions, and it could be more than that. But mm-hmm. Given if there's a demon that could plague, let's say, half the population of the world, well, that puts the population in the billions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's what it is, but the Bible also uses these words like legion. Well, if there were a Roman legion, could be anywhere between 2,000 and 6,000 troops, to give you some idea of the possible number of demons that were in this one person. Even if that's the low end, 2,000,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty scary. That's some pretty scary stuff.
Do you think that people are assigned guardian angels?
I don't know. The class of angel that rebelled in the apocryphal literature were called watcher angels. They were part of a cabal of angels that were, their name probably describes the duties that they had, which is where we get the idea of a guardian angel from. So there probably is a cast of angels that, if not assigned to every person, looks over, certain numbers of people.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that people have demons assigned to them?
Well, that's a great question. I think that depending on how much of a threat they are to the demonic,
the bigger the threat, the bigger the demon.
Yeah, because again, going back to my analogy about the stratagems, if you're thinking about it in military terms, well, yeah, you're gonna put if you got a serious threat, you're gonna put a special forces team to it, or send out a black ops team or something like that. I really think that's what it comes down to, because if you're not a threat to the demonic realm, if you're not living according to the Judeo-Christian principles that are outlined in the Bible, if you're not living according, to what Christ tells us to do, then you're not a threat. You're already as good as won.
Mm. So what you're saying is that people should already be a threat to the demonic realm.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's why it's so important to spend time in the Word and prayer every day. You know, even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes, but that, you know, that time should also it should also impact what you do out in the real world. So yeah, I mean, your only choices are to be a threat or not to be a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to Pascal's wager. I would rather be the threat. I would rather err on the side of the right and the good.
Mm-hmm. There are so many mysterious type monsters out there that people talk about. We mentioned earlier about the dog man, and you know, what about Bigfoot? Does he fall into this realm of demons coming through portals or dimensions?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. You know, there are researchers that fall on both sides of that line. You know, there was an anthropologist at Washington State, Grover Krantz. He taught physical anthropology, and Dr. Krantz always thought that the Sasquatch was a remnant population of a gigantic ape known as Gigantopithecus,
mm-hmm.
and that may very well have been. And they may, you know, they may be clever enough, particularly if they're primates, to be able to elude captors, particularly in remote locations of the continent or the world, really. But then there are accounts of the Sasquatch having a kind of supernatural ability, you know, popping up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Some people report a horrid stench associated with the presence of Bigfoot.
I thought you were going to say Hillary. Do you know who David Politis is?
I've heard the name, yeah.
Yeah, he has this series called Missing 411, and basically he documents people missing from National Park.
That's where I've heard it, yeah.
And I think one of his stories was that somebody was walking down a trail, and they stepped into something, and their leg disappeared, and pulled it back out of there. In other words, they hit a portal, perhaps a Bigfoot portal, to come in and go mm-hmm. in there. But do you think there are dimensional ports around, and I don't know, would it be around the world, around the United States, and people fall into them, or?
I think so. I think that's a distinct possibility, but I also think that there are other, I think that there are agents who operate within the auspices of things like human trafficking, who operate in these remote areas and kidnap people. I remember the first interview I heard with this fellow, and that was one of the things that popped to mind, is like, you know, there are a lot of children that go missing,
mm-hmm.
Remote parks and areas, and they're, you know, in the more rugged terrain, there are hikers and campers and things like that that also disappear. So mm-hmm. I, you know, my gut, I can't prove it, but my gut tells me that that's at least part of what's going on. But as for the supernatural aspect, you know, interdimensional portal, that's not outside the realm of possibility either.
Mm-hmm. All right, another question for you. How long do you think, this is from Glass again, do you think there will be soon be biblical archaeological discoveries that will blow people's minds?
Well, I think that there will be, and I think that there have been. You know, for me and my research in giants, there have been a number of finds in monuments like Gilgal Rephaim and the Golan that has been associated with the Rephaim giants. A friend of mine, Doug Van Dorn, discovered a formation just to the south of that in the shape of a serpent. Which has been dubbed the Serpent Mound, and that is interesting because that area, the ancient name for it was Bashan, and in the Ugaritic language, that means the land of the serpent.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2008, I think it was the excavations at Tel Es Shafi, which was the biblical city of Gath, and people who are familiar with Goliath will recognize that as the hometown of Goliath, and they found a shard of pottery that had Goliath's name carved into it, mm. and there were also other shards that had the Repha, which is where Rephaim comes from, carved into it as well. And there have since been large buildings, which were obviously built for people of larger proportions at the site of Gath. And so those are compelling pieces of evidence that have been unearthed. And I expect that there will be more and more that will come to light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can take this all the way back to the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls at Qumran back in 1947, which consequently happened at the same time Israel was becoming a nation. I don't think that was an accident. These books that shed all this light on these narratives in the Old Testament that had been so obscure for so long. So I think that there's always new and historically, culturally valuable information coming to light, but I think that it's going to get more, more Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, as the years go on.
Mm-hmm. Ted White says, what is the firmament, and did we go to the moon? How do you like that?
Well, I would expect that that's coming from the frame of reference of flat Earth. The firmament comes from I think the Hebrew word is rakia, if I'm not mistaken, which just described the overarching dome of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
We have to remember that although the Bible is historical and is a work of theology, it's not necessarily a work of science.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hebrews at the time didn't have the scientific understanding and equipment to understand the world is a sphere, not a perfect sphere, but a sphere nonetheless.
Mm. Yeah. So what we want to do is drag you into the flat Earth, round Earth controversy just to mess with you.
Right. So as to did we go to the moon? Yes, I believe we went to the moon. I think that we've probably gone to the moon many times. Not all of them have been televised. And the reason that I say that, you know, part of the retort to that is usually, it was filmed on a soundstage. You know, it's all propaganda or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That counts the millions of man hours from engineers and all kinds of technicians and specialists before they even get off the ground, before mm-hmm. they even build the hardware to go there.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing that was all for show. You know, it's just logistically, it just does not compute. It doesn't mm-hmm. make any sense. A number of those, you know, and my hat's off to all of the astronauts, but a number of those guys are also Christians and believers. You know, are you telling me that they're in this satanic conspiracy that people refer to as NASA?
Did you say astronauts?
Astronauts.
Astronauts. Hey.
Yeah, not N-O-T, but N-A-U-T.
Oh, okay. All right, let's get to getting ready to wrap this up here. Are zombies demon-possessed dead human bodies?
Well, that's interesting. You know, again, you can trace the zombie spirit back to the pre-flood world. You know, cannibalism has typically, you know, been involved with the lore of zombies, whether you're talking about the Haitian voodoo zombies or the ghouls of Arabian folklore or the revenants, the Nosferatu of Eastern Europe. You know, they all sort of operate along the same lines. Now, as far as possessing, reanimating a dead corpse, you know, we have to remember that that's not that big of a problem for something, a spiritual entity that's powerful. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that that's what happens every time. Their ability to manipulate matter in the physical world has been evinced in all of these ancient documents, including the Bible and its apocryphal literature. So we shouldn't underestimate, you know, the demonic ability to manipulate physical matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me get to this question here. Cooties 19. We've had discussions on this program with other guests talking about the mark of the beast and that it is perhaps that it changes in some way, it changes your DNA, and then therefore when you die and you go to heaven, because it does seem to be one thing that the Bible clearly says you're not getting in if you've taken the mark of the beast. But we've discussed the possibility that the mark of the beast could alter the DNA of a human, and therefore that is your pass to heaven, that okay, you're 100% human. Because if you go back pre-flood, you see that it said all were imperfect in their generations except for Noah, right, and his family. His generations were perfect, so he proceeded on. The rest of them had imperfect, contaminated DNA combined with monsters and chimeras, and therefore they perished. Now, is there a possibility that the Cooties-19 coming vaccine would change the DNA, and that could cause a block there on the acceptance in the pearly gates?
It is, well, you know, it's possible, I suppose. You know, it also says in the prophetic literature that even the elect would be deceived. You know, the people in the know would be deceived about some of this, and so we have to be very discerning about it. I am leery of a vaccine coming from anything having to do with Bill Gates to begin with, because he is a complete eugenicist. He's admitted as much. He on a TED talk, this guy released disease-infested mosquitoes. This ought to tell you something about this guy. He's, as far as I'm concerned, he's the American Joseph Mengele. I mean, he is a mad scientist. And the other thing, the logical defense that people should be able to throw against this sort of widespread vaccine is, how do you know what you're vaccinating against? Because this disease is already mutated. That's what viruses do. They mutate into different strains, whether they're engineered or whether they're naturally occurring. That's why the flu vaccine doesn't work. You don't know what you're getting inoculated for. Mm-hmm. So the resounder against this, for people who oppose it, and I think you should, is that no, you're not going to mandate a vaccine, because how can you predict? You can't predict.
Well,
you can't predict.
They've already estimated up to at least a third of the U.S. population will refuse to take the vaccine. They have a problem on their hands. Do you think that they would just force it by saying, hey, you can't renew your driver's license, you can't get on a plane? I mean, you think they're going to try to pull that stunt? Or do you think that eventually people can rise up against this and just say, we're not going to take it, no matter what you do?
Either scenario is possible. And I'll tell you what my hope and prayer is, Daniel. I hope that the latter scenario is the one that plays out. I hope that we still have enough of the American spirit to be able and call this stuff out. But it's going to take, all these protesters, they want their revolution, but it's going to take a revolution in the hearts of Americans and people that believe in America, what America is supposed to stand. I believe that we can do it, but it's going to take, bringing us back to what we started with. It's going to take this great awakening. It's going to take another movement, I think, in order to do that. But I think it can happen. And I really do believe that's part of the reason that God called me out to do what I'm doing right now.
So you remain hopeful in the face of this darkness?
Yes, ever hopeful.
Do you have access to your email?
Yes, absolutely.
Check the email I just sent you, and you can reply back to that.
Okay. You want me to do that right now?
Yeah, I do. You don't read it, just as to you.
Well, I say that I do. No, I can't get at it right now for some reason.
All right.
That might be my lack of technical acumen, but
can you see your Skype?
Yeah, hold on just a second.
Okay. All right. Let me go through Skype here. See if I can send you a message here. All right. Can you read messages on it?
I'm in my Skype chat right now.
Okay.
That's affirmative, Ghost Rider.
Okay. All right, let's bring you back in the picture. And, Judd, I understand that your mom passed away recently, and I just feel like give this time here to extend all the Edge viewers and everyone that I know extends our sincerest sympathy to you and your family. Would you like to talk about your mom just a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I appreciate that. I really do. My mom was a singular individual. She had a memory like an elephant. She knew everything about the local history here, but she was a godly woman. She was very devout and an ardent patriot. She was very dismayed by what is transpiring in our country right now, but like me, she was hopeful. You know, she believed that there was enough of the American spirit that, you know, if it came to it, that people of character would do the right thing, and that we'd be able to plow through this. Mm-hmm. She was my biggest fan, and just a wonderful woman, just a really fun person to be around.
Mm-hmm. You wrote on your Facebook page. I don't know if you can read this. Can you see what I put up there?
On the chat?
Can you see that instead of me? Can you see what I just put up there?
Let's see.
It is a Facebook post that you wrote. It says, well, I'd rather you read it, but...
Oh, I can't see it on the screen.
Okay, all right, you can't see it. It's your Facebook post. It says, as we scattered mom's ashes at the mouth of the canyon yesterday, I could not but think of my homecoming echoed in the somber lines of the Navigato about the missionary voyage of St. Brendan. And it says, I have returned to that part of the country that I know as a child. Have I spent time on top of a rugged high mountain overlooking the Southwest wild. Now the session of praying is finished. Now the session of fasting is done. Now the season of waiting is over. Now my journey has just begun. What does that song mean to you, and about your and your mom?
That we were at the top of Mulberry Canyon near Merkel here, Merkel, Texas, where I live. She always wanted her ashes scattered there, and I couldn't help but think of that verse. And of course, it's been put to music by a group called Iona, and it's about St. Brendan, who was an Irish monk, and he was talking about. You know, the place he was overlooking was southwestern Ireland, but it struck me, you know, because I'd moved back home to do that, and to you know, to devote all my time to this, to my researches and to my the Institute of Biblical Anthropology, and I felt that I was needed. I could do that anywhere, and so I felt God calling me back here. So yeah, I'd been called back here, and so I couldn't but think of St. Brendan.
What would you tell people that may be watching the program that maybe lost their mother or their one of their relatives, and that, you know, and the love that came with it? How did you handle it?
Well, I had, of course, the loss of someone that close to you is, you know, that's a process of getting through that, but. You know, we've laughed as much as we've cried, only because of the solace that we have, you know, that she's not suffering anymore. You know, she doesn't have to worry about the cares of this world because she had devoted her life to the Lord, you know, and she's in a place beyond our imagining right now. And that, you know, whether I'm talking to Dad or my siblings, you know, that's been our comfort and solace.
To get the kind of assurance you're talking about, to greet loved ones on the other side and maybe perhaps a heavenly existence, what would you say to folks that would ask, well, how can I have that same assurance?
You can have that assurance by accepting the Lord Jesus as your personal Savior. And we need that as humans because we're not perfect. You know, we can't make our own propitiation. We live in a fallen world, you know. You know, we talk about the pre-flood world and the giants. Well, that corruptive influence came from Lucifer and his angels and this first generation of giants. And so, you know, at one point the Hebrews had propitiation for that, but Jesus became the ultimate sacrifice for all that. He became the last sacrifice. And it's as simple as anything. You realize all these things. You're like, gosh, I'm not perfect. I can't even keep the Ten Commandments, you know. I can't even keep all of those 7 days a week. And so we need that redemption. And it's as easy as admitting that and asking Jesus to come into your life. That's all it is. Everything else follows. I mean, that's the basis of Christian theology right there. All of our differences that we have from denomination to denomination, it's Jesus Christ crucified and resurrected. Everything else falls in after that.
Okay. Very well said. Well, Dr. Judd Burton, I appreciate you coming back on the Edge television broadcast. Can we have you on again sometime?
Anytime. It's my pleasure, Daniel. I love this show.
All right, man. Again, our condolences, and I appreciate you coming on the show. And stay safe, and keep the faith, brother.
You too. Godspeed.
All right. Bye-bye.